Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Here's the podcast from Middays with Susie Larson. Enjoy the conversation. It's only just a matter of Welcome to Middays. I'm Susie Larson. So honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. Well, we were all born with a certain genetic makeup, but did you know that even if you have predispositions towards things, even if there's a familial line, let's say, of anxiety, of anger, of depression, of alcoholism, you're not stuck with it. You can actually change your genetic makeup by certain choices that you make. Well, today we're going to talk a little bit about that. We're also going to talk about the process of getting fit and the process of getting healthy. This is not one of those things you store it up and get it all done in a weekend. You've got to be patient in the process. But we're going to talk about some of the adaptations your body actually makes when you start to make better choices. Well, you can probably guess who I'm going to be talking with today. We have in studio our good friend, Dr. Troy Spurl. He's CEO and founder of Synapse Center for Health and Healing. We get him on once a month, and we have epic conversations. And we're going to talk about that today. We've gotten a lot of requests for the audio from our live event recently, and I just need you to know it was an amazing night. For those of you who missed it, I'm so grateful that we captured it. We're going to be airing it on April 30th, so be sure to be listening for that. So just remember this, you're not competing against anybody when we talk about the progress that you make. You're competing really kind of with yourself. It's just good to identify where you're at, get an honest assessment so you can move on from there. And Doc, I'm not even giving you a proper introduction, but there you are. You are our favorite. You're a superhero, CEO and founder Synapse Center for Health and Healing. Get a question oftentimes, where is it located? Egan, Minnesota. But when I worked in the fitness world, first of all, I'm hitting the ground running. Welcome to the show.
Well, running's a good thing to be hitting right now when we're talking about getting fit and healthy. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for covering for me because I just did that all wrong. Okay, before we get into this conversation, let's talk scripture because you always come armed and I appreciate that. What do you got for us today?
One of my favorites, 1 Corinthians 6:19. Do you not know that your bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have received from God? You are not your own. You were bought at a price. Therefore, honor God with your bodies.
Mm, great. Talk more about that.
Well, the topic today is really talking about getting fit and getting healthy. And there's physical health and then there's spiritual health. And really what they're talking about with the message to the Corinthians there is treating our honoring God by treating our physical body well is as important as the spiritual component to it, and that's just an area of focus I've put on my life as far as helping people. And so for me, it's got just an extra emphasis to say, let's take a look at what's going on in the body and just identifying little things that we can continually be working on. And it's a way of honoring God. It's just another way of showing Him love and just saying thank you by taking care of what He's given us.
I'm so grateful we're talking about this. You know, many years ago, it seemed in the church, the conversations around health, people thought them idolatrous because they're in the world, you know, it's like the enemy's always got the counterfeit. He's not the original. But because the world has made such an idol out of the human body, the church didn't want to go near it. Well, now we've seen that's not sustainable. You have to pay some kind of attention to your health. If you want to show up and give God your best and feel your best and live for your family and all the call that God has given you. Well, I remember when I was in the fitness world for quite a few years, and I was on the plane studying because I was going out to train some instructors at a particular health club. And this guy sat next to me and he says, oh, physiology, huh? Because I was just studying some phys stuff. And I said, yeah. And he said, well, I've pretty much ruined my own life, speaking of physiology. And I said, what are you talking about? And he said, well, one day, he said, his wife was standing doing the dishes, looking out the window, and the neighbor guy jogs by, and he's in really good shape. And she says something like, wow, that Chuck is really in shape. And that's all a husband needs to hear. I'm like, well, what'd you do? And he's like, well, I put my tennis shoes on and went out and showed her what I could do. And he ran, I don't know, 6-10 miles and wrecked his Achilles. I mean, it was like he was still walking funny. I think he said it was 10 months later. And there's a training principle. I don't know if it's still the same because I've been out a while, but the progressive training principle was just ask it, you can get your body to do anything if you ask it nicely in small increments.
Yes.
But just talk about our body's unbelievable capacity to adapt if we ask it nicely.
That's a great way of putting it. And that's pretty much what we see. We don't want people to start by running a marathon. We just don't. We want to see what you're capable of doing. If you get winded going up the stairs, we're going to call that feedback. When I hear a story like that, he got feedback in two ways about Chuck and what his wife likes. So we're going
right.
to, you know, good yeah. for him for paying attention there. But at the same time, a couple miles was too much for him. His Achilles tendons couldn't put up with that. So you start slow and you build for that from there. It's all about being consistent and having awareness of what's going on with your body. Now, when it comes to actually improving, at some point you're going to have to break things down to build them up. That's how muscles work. That's how our blood vessels work. When we're first starting to exercise, it's kind of like there's the blood vessels are like a road that's been closed.
Hmm.
And it's more like a one-lane highway that you're trying to get back to a 3 or 4 or 5-lane highway. You got to break up the cement and the concrete, and you have to pave a new path.
Interesting.
That takes time to do because your arteries, they've shrunk. When you stop exercising, they're not as big as they used to be. When you exercise a lot, you get these big arteries and veins that start to come out because now they have a lot more oxygen they need to deliver to all those muscles and all the cells that are requiring them. So it really takes a little bit of time, and it's very important to really have awareness. So if the first time you go out and if you've not exercised, you're not in shape, just start with a walk, then start with an aggressive walk. Start with 10 minutes and then build up from there. If you can do something consistently for 20 minutes with a good dietary change, 6 months down the road, you'd be surprised what you're doing, which might even be keeping up with Chuck.
Wow, isn't that amazing? You can text in your questions, by the way. We're going to hold off on calls for just a bit, but we're talking about the process of getting fit and the process of getting healthy. They're not necessarily the same thing. We're going to get into the whole epigenetics thing, too, as well. Text in 877-933-2484. I remember when I was studying to be a trainer for group fitness instructors, helping them get certified, I would study how our bodies are made and think, how could people not believe in God? I mean,
yeah.
One of the things, I don't remember the dynamic of it all, but when you stretch, you got to do it in small increments. You stretch too much too soon, you're going to do more harm than good, as with anything with fitness, at least. I don't know if that applies to the physical health thing, but I remember just teaching people to stretch, just going to where you're comfortable and then pushing just a little bit beyond and letting your body adapt. And what I remember, correct me if I'm wrong because it's been so long, but that your body actually recruits little tissues to lengthen the muscle. And talk about just that our body's capacity to adjust. I mean, it really is a supernatural proposition, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're moldable. We can change, and it can happen at any age. And so we do see these things that start off, and people are starting off, and they might not be able to be flexible. They might not be able to have endurance. You just build off of that. And so yeah, you're exactly right. So kind of like with my analogy before, as you're getting into the exercise, the blood flow is increasing. The roads are building. On those roads are little trucks. They actually call them transport vesicles or enzymes that deliver the new products that are going to help build the road. What you're talking about when you're stretching of those muscles, there's extra components to the muscles that get added into it to allow for that stretch and flexibility. And the healthier we get, the stronger our muscles get because they can put up with something a little heavier or a little more demand or load. They have greater endurance, and they're more flexible. So we start to see increased flexibility with increased strength and endurance. And that's when we start to going from fit to potentially healthy. And like you said before, they're very, very different. And maybe in a little bit, I'll talk a little bit about Dr. Cooper, medical doctor, who in the books that he's written in his life really defined the difference between being fit and being healthy.
So interesting. Like, you know, again, like think about running, that you have to give your tendons a time to catch up and to acclimate to the demand you're putting on them. That's why that you need training programs, wisdom in going from walk to run, maybe run a little bit more often, stretching well, lots of water. There is an art to it. But if you could be humble enough, you know, because one of the things the guy on the plane said to me, what was my biggest issue? And I said, can I honestly tell you? And he said, yeah. And I said, your ego, because you wanted to impress your wife, but you
yes.
got to start small. But, you know, on the flip side, you know, I know I have a will. I am a competitor, and I drive hard, and I'm very focused, and I got this Nordic Trek cycle for my birthday Christmas present combined. And you have this leaderboard up on the side as you're riding. I've been enjoying rides through Switzerland these days. I just want you to know.
Nice.
Yeah, I love it. And so I've got to tell you, this leaderboard, I'm embarrassed to say it, but I'm just going to be honest. But I mean, I look over and I see somebody's name and they're 30 years younger than me, and I say out loud, I'm going to beat you today. And I start hauling, and I push hard. And we're climbing mountains at a high incline. It is so hard, and my heart rate is through the roof. The times when I've gone way into anaerobic and stayed there too long, I may have beat them because that's my goal, but I feel crummy the rest of the day. But when I watch my heart rate and I do what you're saying, where I stay in my range and push a little bit harder and push that ceiling, I bump up against it, I go past it, but I respect where I'm really at. When I do that consistently, I actually make huge strides down the line.
Yeah, we see that with all walks of people trying to get healthier. And with guys, we see that a lot of times too, where they're in the gyms and they're trying to improve their strength. And they're doing the bench press. And for us, many, many times, for me to improve their strength in the bench press, I have them stop doing the bench press and I have them start working their other muscles, the muscles that help support all of the bones that help make the pecs there and doing what they're supposed to do. And we call them shunt stabilizers. So we're focusing on their shunt stabilizing muscles to improve their strength in one other area. So really the fascinating thing is if you just keep doing that exercise, you get so unbalanced that you get injured and you never can move past it. But when you start to focus on a balanced exercise, they actually get stronger because they're working on their supporting muscles as much as they are the muscle that they're trying to get stronger in. So a lot of it has to do with just having awareness and getting them through. It looks different. You've got to be in a balanced state, and you can start to see what that is depending on which exercise you're doing. If you have that awareness, pushing through it, not being aware is one of the worst things you can do because it usually leads to some type of injury somewhere.
So, there's all kinds of, informational videos like on YouTube. And I guess just because it's on YouTube doesn't mean it's true or right. But it might be a place to find, like, let's say you're going to start a walking program or running program. Our point here is you be you where you are at and then push yourself just beyond. And just there needs to be a distinction on your workout days between rest days, hard work days, recovery days, right? There needs to be an ebb and flow. You can't just pedal to the metal. And people who do that injure, have overuse injuries. It's predictable.
Yeah, so there's a lot of great information now on YouTube. So find the one that that really fits with you, where you're at with your current level of health, but also something you like to do. And one of the biggest mistakes is people get into it and they start overtraining. You have to recover. When you start working out on muscles, you don't work out on the upper body muscles every single day. One of my best workout plans I've ever done, you do Mondays, you'd start with the upper body. Tuesday's aerobic. Wednesday's a lower body. Thursday's aerobic. Hmm. And then Friday's upper body again. And then Saturday's aerobic. Sunday's day off. And then Monday's lower body. And so that basically allows 3 to 4 days, up to 5 days for recovery for different areas. And so recovery is just as important. And we've talked a lot about this in the past, but recovery is dependent upon how great a health you're in, number one. Recovery is dependent upon diet and other factors. So then you're going to start having more and more feedback or awareness of what's impeding your ability to recover or what's impeding your ability to hit certain marks when it comes to your workout routine. So I do recommend that people kind of jot down, keep a journal, whatever you're doing, so that you can just see, am I making gains or not? And if you're not, there's a reason for that. And when you are making gains, celebrate them and don't celebrate by going out and having cheesecake or whatever it is. We need to have some other healthier form of celebration, a high five or whatever it is.
Yeah. Or an almond vegetable protein shake with some frozen organic fruit. How about that? So, Doc, we're going to pause here, but, I hear you, talking about recovery as much as forward-moving progress is the exercises. Just like sleep is as much a forward-moving element to health. In the same way, we've got to not underestimate, because you break down the muscle and you build it back up in that state of rest and recovery. I hope this is interesting to you. I love it. When we come back, we're going to talk about epigenetics and how whatever you've been handed doesn't mean that's what you have to deal with, but it takes some work. We'll also talk about the body's ability to adapt to the changes that you make to move towards health. Text your questions. We're going to do our best to weave those in. 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute. Thanks so much for tuning in to Middays. I'm Susie Larson. We've got our good friend, Dr. Troy Spurl, in studio, and we have him on once a month to talk about health and the healing process. We're having an interesting conversation about the process of getting fit, the process of getting healthy, the whole point being when you ask your body nicely, you can get it to do almost anything, really. If you just have a patient obedience in the right direction, you make small changes, your body will say, oh, they've got a new rule in mind. They've got a new practice in mind. I want to accommodate them as much as possible. I was born with very little flexibility, but I became a gymnast. My mom used to make me sit in the splits during commercials. If I was going to watch TV, she's like, you're going to do the splits. Because I had no flexibility, but I was able to get flexible to be a gymnast. But it was little at a time, you know. And really, you can be someone who says, I'm not a runner or I'm not a cyclist or whatever. A swimmer, start small. Ask your body nicely. It's amazing what you can do. We're going to talk about some genetics too, the fact that you can change what you hand down to future generations. In fact, you might have inherited a great set of genetics, but you don't steward your stress well. Your self-talk is terrible. You eat terrible. It's changing your genetics, and what you're handing down is different than what you inherited. So this is really an important conversation. I've got a couple of listener questions that have come in here that I want to get to. This dear listener who's had chronic health issues, if I remember right, Lyme, mold, other things, said not ever been able to run for multiple reasons, but want to be able to begin to exercise again after many years of little activity due to chronic illness. Is it possible that I could reach a place where I could walk briskly without getting out of breath or dizzy? Is there anything else I can do to help my body let go of water weight and the toxins it's holding on to within the tissue? What do you say?
Yes, absolutely. So, and one of them is actually going to answer both questions. So the thing to start with is if you're so chronically ill that walking has really caused a problem with the lungs and breathing, it's important to know that when we have problems, when we're immobile, those roads I was talking about earlier, they're not very big roads. So the blood vessels aren't bringing blood to the lungs as efficiently. The lungs are like a filter, and the filter is just clogged. The only way to unclog that is to start breathing, deep breathing. There are a lot of breathing exercises on YouTube again, but there's some people out there. There's a gentleman, I can't recall his name, but he is doing what's being called superhuman feats. But all he's doing is he's taught his body how to handle oxygen at a higher level by doing breathing exercises for 15 years and different types of breathing exercises. And we can do this ourselves at home. So it's really, really remarkable how many people come in and we have to teach them how to breathe again. So they're called reverse breathers. They're actually bringing in a little bit of oxygen and they're not blowing off the carbon dioxide from the lungs, and the lungs are congested. So you have to break through that. So if you exercise and you start coughing up junk, great. We want that. So let's start by just doing some chair breathing, some diaphragmatic breathing, fire breathing it's called, where you take a deep breath in through the nose, you blow out twice as long through the mouth, and just see how you do. Now, if you start getting lightheaded from that, take a break, start doing it again. Get the breathing get on top of the breathing, and then you can start to go for some walks. And if it's a 3-minute walk and you're out of breath, cough up what's going on there. Clean out the filter that is your lungs.
Love it.
And then if you're at home again and you can't walk, move your arms and your legs in a chair. There's so much out there for chair exercises and the breathing exercises. That's where we start. And I've said this before, but chronic illness, lack of movement, we see the ribs start to get stiffer and tighter. When that happens, just 1/4 inch decrease in rib excursion, meaning rib expansion, if it's decreased just by 1/4 inch, that's equal to an Olympic pool, a watered down Olympic pool full of oxygen that our body's not getting every day.
Wow.
That's how much air that your body's not getting. Now, if we can start there and getting oxygen to our body, that's the first thing.
Love that.
Apparently, oxygen's good for our health of every cell in our body. So we want to start with that. And you can move in a chair, you can breathe, and start getting good at the breathing. When that starts to improve, you can start your walking. Anyone who still has the physical ability to walk but is compromised because of their vascular system or their lung system just has to retrain. Now, by breathing, that also starts to move the lymph. If you can't get there on the lymph, then you can do what's called dry brush or rubbing, dry brushing, where you're actually getting in the skin. You can do myofascial sticks to get the lymphatic system moving. They also have these shaking plates that you can purchase online.
You're talking now for detoxing the lymph system.
Yep. Detoxifying the lymph system. If you can't get to the walking, you can stand on these shaking plates. You can get them generally for about $200. Don't buy the real expensive ones. You'll see them up to $3,000. The $200 ones are just as good, especially in the beginning. And they basically move you around, and it mimics a 10 to 15 minute run for the lymph system. So it gets things moving. And then also self-massage at home or with your spouse, you can actually start to push the lymph forward until you can get the muscles going. And just make sure the bowels are moving. That's how you get the exercising, the breathing, and the lymph moving. And then fasting also really helps with movement of lymph. So doing the occasional 24, 48-hour fast really does help the liver system catch up, which helps to pull a lot of that lymph out.
Very good. We all could benefit from deep breathing every day, all of us. That's why a lot of us who have watches that remind us that there's really something to that. My sister had chronic acid indigestion. They could not figure out why, the source, until her chiropractor noticed that she doesn't breathe. She runs hard, works hard, doesn't take deep breaths. When she started to do the deep breathing thing, it took care of the acid indigestion.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. One of the things, too, that they say that you can do at night that a lot of people do when they can't fall asleep, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I'm right about this. No, don't correct me. Do correct me. But where you take slow deep breath in for 8 counts, you hold it for 8 counts, and then you exhale for 16 counts. And they say you do a cycle 3 to 5. Yeah. It just brings everything down and gets you ready for sleep, but it's very healing and cleansing for your body. Kind of the same premise of what you're saying, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's about getting oxygen to our brain. And I don't know if you remember the old trick of breathing in the bag, the paper bag. When someone's having like a panic or anxiety attack, when you breathe in a paper bag, what's happening is you're rebreathing the carbon dioxide, which basically then your body says, oh, no, we need oxygen. And it vasodilates all the blood vessels in our body to deliver all the oxygen that's there. And then when you take a couple deep breaths afterwards, it helps. So that used to be the old medical trick to get us an instant burst of oxygen to our brain. So when we combine that with actual deep breathing, there's a lot of benefit to it.
And speaking of bedtime, dear Judy, I promised her to answer this question about the fruit fiber thing that we do the night before you go to bed if you're someone with low blood sugar. Most people, it's good to go to bed with an empty stomach, but some of us, our blood sugar drops and we wake up in the middle of the night. As soon as I started eating an apple and chicken, because it's fiber and it's protein, I started sleeping through the night. Absolutely amazing. So, Judy, we'll tackle your question. We've got a few more coming in. Great, great conversation with Dr. Troy. We'll be back in a minute. That song played too long. Thanks, Kim, for just letting me do that. It's so good. Thanks for tuning in to Middays. I'm Susie Larson, talking to my good friend, Dr. Troy Spurrell. He joins us in studio every month to talk health and the healing process. We've got a fascinating conversation going. We're kind of hitting pause on where we're going with the process of getting fit, the process of getting healthy, and we are going to revisit this whole genetic thing because I want to. But anyway, we've got a few listener questions, and they take priority over what I want to do, right? And this dear Judy says, this question has to do with your eating fruit before bed. Dr. Troy's suggestion of, she said, can't remember the exact scenario, but had asked it last time he was on. Thought he was talking about tryptophan on eating fruit before bed for fiber. Does it matter what kind? Grapes, bananas? There it is. What do you say?
We were probably talking about just our hypoglycemic patients. So most patients don't need to eat before going to bed, and they do better not eating before bed and stopping an hour after supper, something like that. However, some people have hypoglycemia or reactive hypoglycemia, and if your blood sugar gets too low at nighttime, it'll wake you up. And so a lot of these people that wake up to go to the bathroom, they either have a sleep disorder or low blood sugar. So one of the things you can try is eating something with fiber in it or something that's called low glycemic. So like chicken strips, chicken breast strips, something like that, like protein, where it gives your brain a little bit of energy but doesn't spike the sugar with a crash, or a whole fruit. So one of the best whole fruits is apples. That's one of the things that works really well. Certain fruits have a higher glycemic index, like bananas. Banana's not awful, but I prefer a fruit that's got good fiber. Bowl of blueberries works well because that's a brain nourishing food
as cherries?
Well.
Because they're high melatonin,
yep.
Right?
Yep. So cherries are good. It's really about how slowly they can deliver the sugar. So the fiber is really the important part there. And you don't want to do the juices of fruit because it's not bound by the bound to the fiber. So it's just got to be a slow release of sugar, and that can help people get through the sleep. Now, there wasn't really a serotonin component to that, except for we said the first half of sleep, if we're going to break it into an 8-hour segment, the first 4 hours are more melatonin driven. The last 4 hours are more serotonin driven. And so serotonin is really a lot of it's developed in our GI tract. And so that was more of the intestinal inflammation thing. So make sure you're not consuming something that you're reactive to or something like that, because then that'll end up having a negative consequence in the end. But really it's for the whole fruit, just to help with the low blood sugar. And if that doesn't change the sleep pattern, then something else is causing you to wake. And there are many other things it could be.
Yeah. That might be a game changer for some of you, though, if you've got that low blood sugar issue. I was blown away because I've always gone to bed hungry, always thinking it was good, woke up and stayed awake in that middle of the night. And what a treasure it is to be able to sleep all night now. Well, this dear listener says, my husband started noticing floaters in his eyes a few years ago, and they're slowly becoming more numerous to the point his vision is blurry. Anything that can be done to remedy the problem? And I guess my follow-up question would be, are there multiple causes for floaters, or is it usually pinned to one thing?
No, multiple causes.
Really?
So we'll boil it down to two main areas. So basically, a lot of times it's flaking off of the inside lining of within the eyeball. And so we need antioxidants to keep that healthy. So the reason why we wouldn't be getting those antioxidants would be some level of nutritional deficiency. So poor diet can do it.
Chemotherapy
can do it because that'll pull antioxidants out of your body. So we need the antioxidants. Antioxidants are mostly in fruit and vegetables. And then there's things that can block the antioxidants from being delivered. Again, circulation, it's got to come through our bloodstream to get to the eyes. And so certain things in our head can cause that. So lymphatic congestion or too much of a lymph system can block the circulation so we don't get things to our fingers or toes and our eyes. So especially if you have something like if you've got toe fungus and then you've got floaters in your eyes, that's really poor lymph system, probably with a little bit of fungal infection or candida systemically. There might be something going on there. But generally, it's something that's going to congest the lymph system or deplete your antioxidants or be affected because of poor circulation. Poor circulation to the head is almost always something in the sinuses, hidden infections like Marcon's. Food sensitivities can do that. But bottom line is it gets to a point where all of a sudden you can't deliver the antioxidants properly. So boost your antioxidants and then see what might be interfering with the lymph system. And that can be anything from an infection to too many chemicals, too much sugar. Anything that we've ever talked about that actually congests the lymph system can cause that.
A good probiobiotic, too, would be good then, right? And even if it isn't candida, everybody should have a good probiotic.
Good biome in the digestive tract. So make sure you're having bowel movements. Just constipation can cause eye floaters in time.
Yeah, because your system, you know, gets all backed up. And,
literally,
you know, really, we've talked about the whole idea of cleaning out the lymph system. Sweating is good. Exercise,
yes.
You know, back to our exercise thing. We are made to move.
Yes.
And don't believe the lie. I feel like sometimes you make an agreement with frailty, an agreement with weakness, really. And if you've been through stuff and you've been sick a long time, I think our inner agreements, maybe we do a show on that some other time, but there is really something to be said about in your kind of core belief system, I agree that I'm frail. I agree that I'm weak. You got to break those things because, and start saying, you know, there's more right with my body than wrong with my body. I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. I mean, I feel passionate about that because I did that when I felt my worst. And that's not a name it, claim it thing. The Bible says, let the weak say I'm strong. So that's what I was doing. But
it changed your internal story and it
totally
makes a difference.
Did. Yeah. Which brings us to epigenetics. I see a few more questions coming in, but hang with us. We're going to pause and talk about this a bit because I think it's fascinating. You know, when you inherit your genetic pool, so to speak, you're not stuck with it. And even the idea of stewardship, Dr. Troy, of someone maybe who's, you know, received a really great, you know, pool of genes, so to speak, I'm probably not even saying that right, but they squander it because of how they manage their stress, the choices they make. Yep. It changes what they're handing to their children, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It really, with epigenetics, we know it's all about the environment you put yourself in. And that includes the environment of the people you're hanging with, the people that you're eating with. And then we break it down even more around the genes. It's the environment around the genes. So all the different things that can impact the environment around the genes. And we now know our thoughts play a role with that. We now know the food we eat plays a role with that. The strength of our immune system plays a role in that. So there's so many factors that can influence our epigenetics. And one of the things that I've always said used as an example is that we could be having a great conversation like our live event. There was how many people there? There was
180, I think.
180 people there. Have a great conversation. And then if just 2 7-foot-5 bikers with weapons attached to their body walk in, that would change the mood in the room. That's what epigenetics is like.
Interesting.
Epigenetics is the environment around the genes altering those gene traits. And so you could have 180 Jesus worshiping people surrounded by you and be lifted up and just the best of your genes comes out, like what we experienced. Or you could have, I don't want to pick on Hell's Angels, but we're going to say a bike gang come in, just 2 or 3 of them.
There's some really nice bike gangs out there.
I really
Let's
do
talk
have
about
met
the
some.
Meanies is what we mean. It's the ones who intend harm. Okay.
Yes, the bad ones.
Yeah.
And so they can alter the expression. I'm sure our conversation that we had that day would have been a little different and could have been different. Or at least the people that were listening to us, their conversations, they would have been distracted. They would have, and then mistakes are made, and that's what happens with our genes.
Wow.
So the funny thing is, when we look at how we're made in God's image, we see bits and pieces of how we're made within our interactions in the world all the time, and that's one of the reasons why I like using analogies like that and examples like that, because that's what happens at the cellular level. That's what we see under a microscope and in the science. That's what we see, and then we're like, well, that's just like when we've got some people who aren't nice that come into the room and it changes our conversation.
It's fantastic.
I love it because we get to see it in a different way that's a little more obvious to us.
So let's break it down even more. So I want you to paint 2 scenarios for me. A person who's inherited a great set of genes. I envy that because I've had a little rough go of that in that category. But give me some examples. Paint a scenario where they've inherited these great genes, choices, things they may, you know, how they manage stress, things they tell themselves, and how really physiologically that plays out and passes down. And then reverse scenario where someone's inherited a rough situation, but they fought for it and what they literally are handing down to their next generation.
So as you're saying that, I had two people pop up in my head right away, so I'll use their examples. The first one is of great genes. You could have the best genes in the world. They're still imperfect human genes at this point. There's still going to be something within them, and so there's always going to be limits. So if you are constantly pushing your limits, eventually you're going to get to the point of collapsing, and you have to still get back to the reality of, I need to have awareness. So if you're not sleeping, if you're not taking care of your body, there will eventually be a consequence. And with this particular individual, he would not sleep and was very motivated to actually do work. And then going to the point of working and then taking drugs like cocaine to keep the work levels up, there are consequences to that. And there are numerous stories actually of that happening where these people are just gifted, super intelligent people. And a year later, they're living on the street because of the poor choices they made. And so a very, very damaging drug like that can take the best of genes and bring them down to someone that is unrecognizable within a very, very short period of time.
So what are they handing down to their children? And physiologically, you know, and even a lesser degree, maybe it's someone who is a workaholic, but who's constantly talking about their stress, constantly taking shortcuts in diet. What literally happens physiologically? What are they handing to their kids?
So from pure genetics, they still have the gifted genes, if that's what they were. Now, if they have kids after taking the drugs, yeah, if they had kids after that, then they're potentially handing down some damaged goods,
wow,
so to speak. So there are consequences because of that. And so we do see that, because we see some people who have kids later in life, they've already had some experiences in life and maybe passing down some traits that weren't there or wouldn't have been there if they'd had their kids in their 20s.
That's
so
fascinating.
We see that, right?
Wow.
So, but there's still the potential for that child to then make good decisions with their life and get back and pass down the genes of the grandfather. We've also seen and do know that certain chemicals in our environment don't appear to impact the child, but they impact the next child. So sometimes, like with Agent Orange, there's research out there that shows that it wasn't the offspring of the child that was impacted more than the second generation,
wow,
yeah, the grandchild.
Wow.
So there are other components and stories to that.
And then you got the person who's maybe got a rough go and has some genetic deficiencies, susceptibilities, vulnerabilities. You know, one example we've used on the show before is you may have a predisposition to anxiety because past generations worried out loud, spoke fear into your life constantly, which affects physiology, starts to affect digestion, sleep, all those things, how you fight illness. That's what you've inherited. You don't have to live with it. You can actually overcome it. You just may have to fight a little harder.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to work at it, and you have to have awareness. It's a lot of what we've been talking about. And the example I'm going to use here is one of my mentors. When he was teaching me, teaching everyone at the time, but in these classes, his story was such that there was not a male in his family that lived past the age of 50 because they all died of heart disease. So for him, now taking this functional medicine, healthy approach, he did everything he could to help his health, to help with that, to try and understand what was going on there. Well, he's now well past 50 and doing quite well, very, very healthy and fit and healthy, as we're talking about both areas. And he's set up a routine and taken care of himself, and he's undone that trend. There, he is now the first male who broke the cycle.
Wow.
And I can guarantee you his kids are going to be doing the same thing. Mm.
So when we come back, I see a few more questions coming. I'm going to sort through those, but we'll talk too about your body's ability to adapt. Let's say you already blew your New Year's resolution. Well, we're going to start again. So let's say we started today taking some healthy supplements, maybe cutting down a little bit on the sugar and the sodas and all that stuff, and just made some tweaks and adjustments. What happens in your cells? Maybe you start telling yourself a better story. You break those internal agreements with things that are killing you, and you start to agree with God that you're fearfully and wonderfully made. Remember what David said? He says, "My soul knows it full well." I just got an honest question for you. Does your soul know it full well that you are fearfully and wonderfully made? Because that should be a pursuit. You should be able to say that about your life. I know this deeply, that I was fearfully and wonderfully made. What tweaks could you make? And what kind of change would it make in your body? This is a process. We got to think long here. And again, we'll try to grab a couple questions. Dr. Troy is our good friend in studio. Here's the number if you want to try and text 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute. Middays. I'm Susie Larson. We're having a fascinating, at least I think it's fascinating. And who else says it's fascinating? One of my listeners just said, oh yeah, Rhonda, super fascinating. So Kim loves it. Rhonda loves it. I love it. I hope you love it too. We've been talking about this process, our body's ability to change, to adapt to the choices we make, the story we tell ourselves, talking about physically getting fit, about really physically getting healthy. They're kind of two different things. The idea that you can actually change your genetics based on the choices that you make, I think it's just profound and powerful. This dear listener says, can you touch on sleep apnea? My husband told me I snore and stop breathing for about 5 seconds off and on, then I gasp for breath. I'm overweight. And it says half of a sentence, but I think, can losing weight cure this? What do you say?
Yeah, so the first thing is to start with losing weight. So with sleep apnea, it's literally not getting enough oxygen, and the palate itself can be weak. It can become weak. And so as we gain weight, our airway becomes more closed off. As we become more nutrient deficient, our tongue can actually swell and roll back into our airway. And so the reality is there are night guards, there are CPAPs, there are different things. We also find in the chiropractic world that if your occiput or the skull is not fully aligned properly, that the nerves don't support the muscles properly. So it's a muscle weakness issue in some people. It is being overweight. So it definitely can be, I never like to use the word cure, but we've had people who've had it and then get treated or lose weight and then don't have it. So if you want to call that a cure, yes, that's possible. Is that true for everyone? No, there's very different circumstances that can set it up. But losing weight's the first and foremost. The more we move and exercise, the stronger that airway gets. The other thing is singing is one of the best things you can do to help with sleep apnea after losing weight, to strengthen those muscles. Singing, gargling, running, and getting that exercise again, those things help with that area. Other things can interfere. So anything that's congesting the sinuses can become problematic. So food sensitivities, we get dry nasal passages or seasonal allergies. Things like that can start to compromise our ability to get oxygen in as well. So you want to work on strengthening that area, and singing is one of the best things you can do.
So good. So we only have about 8 minutes left. You know, there's going to be a day where we're going to get more time to talk than an hour. I'm just saying there is a day coming. But right now, we got 8 minutes left. And I want to talk about just the physiological changes that happen. I mentioned this on the show before with you, but my hubby once, just as an experiment, decided to try to drink, I think, 10 to 12 glasses of water a day. He just upped his water intake, and he lost 10 pounds in about 3 weeks just from... We're going to talk about some basics, and I know Dr. Troy's dying to talk about poo, and we'll get there. he's like chomping, you know, but we're going to talk about rest real quickly. We're going to talk about water, but some of the basics you've talked about before that our bodies need for health. But water, what changes when we start hydrating?
Well, everything does, because the majority of how our body communicates is via water. So the blood flow only flows because we're hydrated. Blood brings oxygen. And then once your oxygen is there, it gets used through a process. But once it gets inside the cell, you have to have water inside the cell. So the majority of our transportation that occurs inside of us is water driven. So we have to have water. Also, on YouTube, and I think we've got on our website too, I put a video together of our immune system, and it's showing the immune cells swimming. If you are dehydrated, your immune cells can't get to where they need to go to, so you can't protect you against viruses, bacteria, and even cancers. And so we see at a cellular level how important water is. So the challenge is some people may be bloated and feeling like they have too much water, but the reality is the water is in the wrong spot. We're not getting it to where it needs to go.
I was going to say, if we retain water, it's because we don't have enough water. Our body's kind of trying to hoard it, right?
Yes, it's trying to put it into the lymph system to get rid of something else, to get rid of a toxin, an infection, something like that. So bloating, it takes a little bit of re-educating on the water. And so if you're in a pretty good shape, you can drink water and lose weight like your hubby. If you drink water and you keep on bloating, something else is going on that has to be addressed.
Okay. And it can affect, you know, water, it improves your skin, your hair. If you go to a massage therapist, they'll tell you right now you're either dehydrated or you're very hydrated. They can tell when they're working on you.
Oh, yeah. We can tell just with looking at the skin, too. If you pinch the back of your hand, your knuckle, if you can raise the skin and it kind of stays wrinkly and comes up, you're dehydrated for the most part.
Wow.
So that's, and you can, it can be different from one arm to the other. As I'm actually doing it on myself, I have a little bit of a difference between my right versus my left. So I need to increase the flow on one arm versus the other.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So here we are. We just got a few minutes left. This man carries around pictures of number two. He just, yes. This is like so dear to his heart. So I'm sorry. Our producer's cringing. But no, this whole idea of what happens in the bathroom experience is a huge indicator to health. So go ahead.
It is. I'm gonna say the whole thing though. So I wanna
yeah,
I'll go
I'm
through
sorry,
the whole
I'm
list.
Teasing
and
him,
then,
but all right.
No, you're just focused on number two.
Exactly.
So we'll get to that. Because
yes.
It is so important. But first of all, the difference between fit and healthy, one of the examples I wanted to use is Dr. Kenneth Cooper, the medical doctor who wrote the book, The Aerobic Breakthrough. And he's the one that got everyone running marathons back in the 60s and 70s, late 60s, 70s. And then 20 years later, when all those marathoners were dying of heart attacks, he wrote The Antioxidant Revolution.
Wow.
So those marathoners were fit, but not healthy.
Oh,
that's
my
right.
Goodness.
So his story of him writing those two books really tells the tale. So to be healthy, I've got a breakdown of the eight things I usually just list off to my patients. All you have to do is get good at these things, these eight things, and you will eventually be healthy. Number one, eat right. Think right. Poop right, my favorite. Drink right. Sleep right. Talk right. Move right. And then finally, love.
Love it.
And so those are the list. Those are the things we want to do. And I know I said those fast, so I'm going to say it again.
Yep.
Eat right. Think right. Poop right. Drink right, sleep right, talk right, move right, and finally love. If you can just work on those things, you're going to make gains with your health. And there's an old saying, you are what you eat, but if you're not pooping right, you are what you don't eliminate. Mm. And with how toxic our food is nowadays, we are literally stuffing garbage into our bodies, and that's not how you treat a temple. You don't put garbage in a temple.
I'm wondering if you have a few minutes, and feel free to say no, because I just thought of this just now. Can you hang with us for a few minutes after the live show and walk through those eight for bonus material?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so that would be amazing, because I know you're all going, wait, what? Poop right, think right, what? You know, so now we're going to get it right. And we've said the word four times now. Hope we don't get in trouble. But anyway, all right, so let's talk if we can. We've just got about 2 minutes left. First of all, Terry writes this in. He says, hey, Susie, no question. Want to thank you for a terrific show. It's been a while since I've had the pleasure to listen because of his work schedule. God's so awesome to put me here at this moment here. This inspirational, motivating segment really forces me to move and take action. Love it. And he says, and the bumper music helps with that. I love it very much. Come on, somebody. So I want to talk a little bit more now. So we talked about someone who starts drinking water. What if they start to just add a couple vegetables a day? I mean, things like that that are just sort of, they're adding some good things.
Yes, absolutely. It doesn't take a lot. And if you're adding water, remember, it's not how much you drink, but how much you retain and where you retain it. So if you add a few things in, it's all about being consistent and building off of that. And so drinking lots of water, if you're just drinking it and peeing it out, that's generally a sign that you need to break up some of that lymph or get that water going elsewhere. So we usually see the need to clean out the bowels or to start moving more. So those are the two scenarios that that'll tell you how to improve the water that you're taking in. Start sweating, start moving, and make sure the bowels are doing well. Vegetables have such a good impact on our overall health in general. And so a green diet is really healthy. And sometimes in the beginning, you're so inflamed that you cannot handle raw vegetables. It's okay to cook them and eat them soft and enjoy them. They have fiber. They have antioxidants. They have properties that heal us. A lot of them do. Even if you don't really know what to do, just taking herbs like cilantro or basil, there are healing properties to those herbs, and putting those on whatever you have. If I have salmon, I will put cilantro on there or something along those lines that's green on top of it, spinach leaves. And it really makes a big difference just to get that little bit extra in all the time.
One thing I've been doing a lot of lately is those shaved Brussels sprouts, then a big pile of broccoli, a little bit of olive oil, and a little bit of organic maple syrup. I hope that's okay, but I just love...
No, that. We
are
do
you
that
cringing?
Too.
Oh, you're good.
No,
I thought I was in
and
trouble.
We add a little turkey bacon to that, and it's actually quite a... Yes.
I didn't want to say it, but okay, I'm coming out. I put turkey in there. But and then you put them on a cookie sheet, mm-hmm. 350, something like 25 minutes. Yep. Unbelievable. So healthy. Okay, from now on, I'm going to be honest. Okay, we're going to... this is the end of the show, actually. Here, look at where the time has gone. But we are hanging on with Dr. Troy for some bonus material. You're listening to the live show. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. It's so wonderful. And we post bonus material there quite often. Thanks for tuning in today. Hope you found some encouragement here. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Middays with Suzy Larson. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can become a supporter now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player. And never miss a show.